Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Loke ten ahata loke. Loka pala hata ojasaha. Yaveda yan vishwa shvijay. Dvanta vyatikaram disham. Loke ten ahata loke. Lokapala hatau jasaha. Yavedayan vishwasvijay. Dvanta vyatikaram disham. Loke. Within this universe. Tena. By the force of the pregnancy of ditti. Ahata. Being devoid of. Aloke. Light. Lokapala. The demigods of various planets. Hata ojasaha. Whose prowess was diminished. Nyavedayan asked. Vishvasvijay. Brahma. Dvanta vyatikaram. Expansion of darkness. Disham. In all directions. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. By the force of the pregnancy of ditti, the light of the sun and moon was impaired in all the planets, and the demigods of various planets, being disturbed by that force, asked the creator of the universe, Brahma, what is the expansion of darkness? What is this expansion of darkness in all directions? Purport. It appears from this verse of Srimad Bhagavatam that the sun is the source of light for all planets in the universe. The modern scientific theory, which states that there are many suns in each universe, is not supported by this verse. It is understood that in each universe there is only one sun, which supplies light to all the planets. In Bhagavad Gita, the moon is also stated to be one of the stars. There are many stars, and when we see them glittering at night, we can understand that they are reflections of light, just as moonlight is a reflection of sunlight. Other planets also reflect sunlight, and there are many other planets which cannot be seen by our naked eyes. The demoniac influence of the suns in the womb of ditti expanded darkness throughout the universe. The view of modern science is incomplete. It is outward. It is directed outward to the gross phenomena of matter. But actually, matter has its subtle aspects that science is only barely groping to try to comprehend. And apart from that, maybe scientists can perfect their techniques and eventually perceive more subtle forms of matter, just like they discovered electricity and they developed technology to use it. Earlier in previous centuries, this electricity was unknown. It was there. It's not that they invented it. They discovered it. The electrical capacity,
the capacity to use electricity was always there. The laws of nature didn't change in the 19th century. It's just that man discovered how to harness it. But there are other things going on beside the subtle forces that can be gradually understood and even conquered. That they can do eventually, possibly. But what they just refuse to see and will never see, as long as they maintain a materialistic viewpoint, is that nothing happens without consciousness controlling it. That all the electrical forces and all the other physical phenomena of dynamics of the material existence, whenever anything happens, whenever anything moves, it's because of the involvement of consciousness. There is, in other words, intelligence behind everything that happens. And the materialistic science does not allow for that. It cannot. It has its limitations, it has its axioms. And the basic axiom, maybe unspoken one, is the reduction of everything to physical phenomena. Consciousness is not part of the picture. Consciousness, if anything, is what we call epiphenomenon, something that evolves out of matter. But the Vedic point of view, the traditional point of view, is opposite. That life comes from life, and matter comes from life. The life, the consciousness, the Atma is original. And from that Atma evolves matter. Etasmad Atmanaha Sambhuto Yam. This material creation, according to Taittiriya Upanishad and many other authoritative scriptures, the material creation evolves from the Paramatma. Particularly, there's one form of the Lord, the Purusha, who expands it in three different varieties, who is the creator, the one who evolves matter from spirit. It's that supreme consciousness, that supreme intelligence that makes it possible for the material creation to occur. There is so much order, so much complexity, so much elegance in the structure of the universe. What to speak of anything happening, even if you just take a still picture, it's a picture of enormous beauty and complexity. Such cannot be created unless intelligence creates it. It doesn't happen by accident. By accident, we get chaos. By intelligent direction, we get order and beauty. So the supreme orderer, the supreme controller, he's the not only the antaryami, which means the inner controller, the controller in the heart. He's the bahyayami also, the controller of everything outside. So science can focus on what's on the outside, it's okay. But you must see it in the perspective. The outside is connected to the inside. You cannot pretend there is no inside, that there is no spirit. If you do, then you have a distorted picture of reality. This is Prabhupada's problem with the material scientists. He doesn't mind if they recognize Krishna as a supreme reality and then develop knowledge and technology to manipulate the external energy. Of course, they should acknowledge Krishna's. They should acknowledge that it's his energy and therefore use it for his service. I may be very knowledgeable and I may be very clever to manipulate something, but if I don't have any right to touch it, if it belongs to someone else and he has not given me his permission to use it, then I'm criminal, no matter how clever I am. I know how to use money very nicely, but if I steal it from somebody else, I'm a criminal. No matter how nicely I can use it, if it's not my money, if I have no right to have it, then I'm a criminal. No matter how nicely, I may use it for charity, for charitable altruistic purposes, Robin Hood stealing from the rich and giving to the poor, but he's still a criminal, according to the law. He may have gotten his pardon from the King of England, I think that's part of the story, but technically he was a criminal. Whether you're stealing from the rich and giving to the poor, you're stealing. So if we try to use Krishna's energy, not acknowledging you know, getting permission from the copyright holder to use his material, then we're in copyright violation, in violation of property rights of the Supreme Lord. Ishavasyam idam sarvam yat kinchit jamjagat. Everything in this universe, including all the, Hare Krishna, all the things that you use in your technology, all the raw materials of your technology, are the property of the Supreme Lord. You must acknowledge his supremacy. And the mode of acknowledgement is not just some lip service, but to use it as he allows. The owner can give you permission to use his property, but then he stipulates how you can use it. So the stipulation of how we can use the property of God is given to us in the Shastras, in the Vedic Shastras, the Dharma Shastras and other Shastras. For materialists, the Dharma Shastras are there, Karmakandis. What you're allowed to do, how you're allowed to use the energy of God. Tena tyaktena bunjita, you may enjoy as he sanctions. So specific sanction is given, how we may and how we should not utilize the energy of God. And different people have different licenses. One person has a license to use freely, another person has a much more restricted license. The Shudra has a restricted license. The Brahmin has a broader license. Because he will not misuse the way the Shudra will. So the Brahmana is given freedom to use God's energy in ways that the lower classes are not. But the general principle is, it must be according to sanction. Tena tyaktena, as sanctioned by him, you can enjoy, you can use. Bunj means to enjoy, it also means just to use. Bhubuja, it means ruler of the earth, king. So it doesn't just mean he's an enjoyer. You know, he's just having, you know, banquets every night and enjoying himself in his harem. No, it means Bhuj means he's ruling. He's utilizing God's property, not only for his enjoyment, but as a matter of duty. That is also Bhuj. Tena tyaktena bunjita. You utilize what is God's property in his service, not just for sense gratification. We get this image in the Old Testament of the Bible. God created the Garden of Eden and told Adam and Eve, enjoy, just don't eat that apple over there. But this is for your pleasure. That's an erroneous conception. This world is not created as a garden, a playground to enjoy. First of all, it's a penitentiary, not a playground. You know, there may be an exercise ground in the penitentiary, but it's not a pleasant place. You can get, you know, if you step on the wrong person's toe, he could stab you to death in the playground of the penitentiary. My brother was in jail, and it's a rough place. Dangerous people, they put criminals in the place. You don't want to be with them. The whole world is a penitentiary, a prison house. So it's not the Garden of Eden. It never was. This Garden of Eden is a myth. It's an erroneous myth. The world is created so that if we want to, we can try to be imitation gods. Or we can take the same material things and use them, trying to become, again, a servant of God. We can use them for the service of God. Krishna will accept our offerings, even made out of matter. What use does he have for matter, for material objects, material substance? He has no use for it. Just like a child wants to cook something for his parents, and he cooks some, you know, mud pie. You know, gives to the father, so the father, you know, pretends to enjoy it out of love. So we offer to Krishna our chapatis made out of material flour and water. And Krishna accepts, just out of love. He has no, you know, interest in matter. It doesn't taste good to him, but he tastes the love. So we can use the same material energy that is meant to entrap us and to let us indulge our fantasies of enjoyment and control. We can use that same material energy to practice serving Krishna, and Krishna will accept. Practice on the material energy, and then you'll be given some, if you do a good job, you'll be given some spiritual energy to try it out on. What is it? Matrartam cha bhavayartam. Atmane Kalpanaya Cha. The Supreme Lord created this world for three basic reasons. Matrartham, that means bhoga, for sense gratification. That's what most living entities want, sense gratification. So the Lord creates the world for that. But also, and bhavayartham, and for success. You know, for people have various ideas what success in life. To go to heaven, to make $1 million, whatever. To win an election. So that's also purpose in the material world, to act out your fantasies of success. To stuff your face, and then also try to achieve something exalted. But it's still material. And then atmane kalpanayacha, and for self-realization. That's the third purpose of the material existence. The Lord, the Purusha, creates this world out of our desire. He doesn't have much desire to have a material world. He doesn't need one. But we're itching for one. We're demanding one. So he gives it to us. And that's his lila. Satisfying his wayward children and giving them the nonsense they want, but giving it to them in such a way that they won't actually harm themselves in the long run. Keep them under control and gradually rectify them.
Hare Krishna. Okay, so any questions or comments? Yes, Prabhu.
You mentioned that according to Dharma Shastra, some people are given more freedom, more license.
Yeah. Brahmins, higher classes.
So, but from our point of view, we know that, for example, the Shudras are the least restricted. They just know principles, and Brahmins are most restricted. Do this, take right hand, take this. From the point of view, Brahmins are so much.
Well, yeah, from a point of view, but we have to balance, we have to look at the whole picture. Brahmins have a lot of rules to follow. A lot of injunctions. Shudras are also kept under control by brute force, by the laws of nature. A person, not just, you know, according to your varna, but just according to your body. If you're a sinful person, you're put into an animal body, and that puts you in severe restriction. You can't do things that human beings can do. You know, you can't do calculus and program computers if you're in an animal body. You know, the ability has been taken away from you to do so many things and to get into trouble the way human beings get into trouble. Animals can't. So, and then being a higher class human being, being a lower class human being, you are restricted by nature and by your social position. You know, you have to listen to, you have to work for somebody else. A Brahmin works for himself. So that's a much more liberated condition than someone who's someone else's employee. You know, the Shudra doesn't have rules, but he has, by nature and by the social situation, he has restrictions imposed on him. He won't listen to rules anyways. What's the use of giving him rules? But he's kept restricted even more than the Brahmin by other means. So you see the whole picture of how we're restricted, not just by injunctions, but by force of nature and by force of the social arrangement and by the economy, economic situation. A Vaishya has to worry about making money and fight to get money. Brahman doesn't care. He's free from that. He doesn't even think about money. It just comes. What he needs comes. And he's satisfied with whatever comes, and he's not always thinking about money. I hope so. A Brahman shouldn't. So that's freedom. You know, it's restriction imposed by nature, by economy, by social pressures, and so on. Okay. Hare Krishna. Okay, thank you. All glories to Srila Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.